The FIFA World Cup is here, and you can now feel the thrill of the pitch in FIFA World Cup Launch Edition on Netflix. A fast and fluid football game where your phone is the controller and the TV is the stadium. Play for your country in 16 different stadiums with up to four friends, all included in your membership. Scroll to the Games tab on your TV and play FIFA World Cup Launch Edition now, only on Netflix.
Welcome in. It is the Friday, February 7 edition of the NFL Spotlight Show, the final show of the week before Super Bowl Sunday. And what a day it was on Thursday. Here on the show today, we're of course going to go back and look at what happened at NFL Honors on Thursday night. As well, here on the back end of the show, I had a chance to speak to several people from Radio Row in New Orleans, including Tristan Wirfs and Kobe Turner and a bunch of other people. You'll see that over here on the back end of the show over here. A bit of a special episode of NFL Spotlight before the Super Bowl on Sunday. But let me bring in my good friend Ben Allen. Ben, what is going on? NFL Honors just ended, and some surprises, some things that we expected. We did our award show on Tuesday. I actually got a bit of a complete sweep for me, besides for assistant coach of the year, but yet some things over here that we were not expecting.
Yeah, for sure. We were talking about it a little bit off air. You were definitely right on with things. I don't know if we didn't do Walter Payton Man of the Year though. So I don't know if you were going to be able to pull out Eric Armstead, but yeah, it was a great night. A lot of hardware handed out. Walter Payton Man of the Year, like I already said, went to Eric Armstead. Pat Surtain won Defensive Player of the Year, Barkley Offensive Player of the Year. And then the tightest race of the night was that for MVP, with Josh Allen collecting his first set of hardware in a slim win over Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson was the first team all-pro selection at quarterback, but not the MVP. Was this the most surprising result of the night?
Well, when I picked Josh to win on Tuesday when we did our award show, I really thought Lamar was going to be the winner, because when the all-pro teams came out a few Fridays ago, Lamar was first team All-Pro, Josh was second team. And if you know how this process works, the same 50 voters who vote for All-Pro are voting for MVP. So if you had Josh over Lamar there, I would assume you're going to have Josh over Lamar, or vice versa, Lamar over Josh over here as well. And of course, that's not what ends up happening. And I don't know exactly the reasoning behind all of it. I've not spoken to all 50 voters. It's a bunch of different people here, different, whether it's former players or writers or whatever it is. But the point is, I do wonder if these people were like, you know what, the first team all pro for us was the best statistical season, which obviously was Lamar, but the MVP is the most valuable player. And Josh, of course, lost players this offseason with Stephon and Mitch Morse and Gabe Davis. And people were like, you know what, Buffalo is going to have a bit of a reset of here. Meanwhile, Baltimore, of course, added Derrick Henry, who I believe finished second in offensive player of the year, or third, somewhere around there here in the voting on Thursday night. So if we look at the overall NFL season, all the expectations, we're going to give it to Josh. That was my reasoning when I voted for Josh on Tuesday when we did our award show. But I really thought that this would be a scenario where it ends up being Lamar was first team all pro, means Lamar wins MVP, and we have MV3 over here for Lamar. It does not happen. Josh wins it for the first time in his career, and that's the way it went down. But a very, very interesting way for it all to unfold over here, to see first team all pro, of course, go to Lamar, and then the MVP go to Josh.
What'd you think about some of the other awards? Were there anyone else that surprised you? I know you pretty much nailed them, but were there any other ones that the results, the totals, that were surprising to you?
Yeah, I mean, I was actually texting with somebody, a friend of mine who's more of a fan, not necessarily in the media, but the NFL, before the season started, and I mentioned this to you on Tuesday, they made it clear, the AP made it clear, comeback player of the year must be a player coming back from injury. And this thing, people are able to bet on this thing, and I know a lot of people bet on Sam Darnold to win. He essentially had no chance to win this thing because it was not coming back from an injury. It was coming back from not playing well or not being a starter or whatever it is. So I don't know if people really knew of that rule, but the reason why Joe Burrow won this thing and won it by a landslide was because he was coming back from a wrist injury. Meanwhile, Sam Darnold had an exceptional year in Minnesota. I believe he got 8 first-place votes. I guess those 8 voters did not realize the change. The reason he didn't win over here was because they essentially switched the rules over here in the offseason. Last year, we saw Joe Flacco win. The year before, we saw Geno Smith win. if the rules were still the same way, I think Sam Darnold had a pretty good shot of winning. But of course, they changed those rules and they went with Joe Burrow, Coach of the Year. I know me and you had this debate on Tuesday's show. I said Kevin will win. You thought Kevin would also win, but you picked Dan Campbell. But the way I looked at this as well, and the way I think it is every year, the coach that exceeds expectations and does more than expected is the person I think is going to win this thing. And Kevin O'Connell squeaked by and beat Dan Campbell for that award over here on Thursday night as well. The only other surprises over here for me, Ben, were the Hall of Fame. And I don't want to get too in-depth about all of this, but they did change the rules over here last year about how the entire process unfolds. And we only saw three modern era finalists make it into the Hall of Fame. That was Jared Allen, Eric Allen, and of course, Antonio Gates, who I thought should have won in last year on the first ballot. But there was no Eli Manning, there was no Luke Kuechly, no Adam Vinatieri, no Steve Smith, and on and on and on. And I don't want to get too detailed into the switch over here, but it used to be you pick five modern era finalists, yes, no, and that's it. They've changed a little bit towards a bit of an MLB style where you have to reach a percentage over here in order to get in. And the number is 80%. And they're dwindling it down basically in that room from 15 to 10 to 7. The entire process, I saw The Athletic write about it. I saw Mike Sando write about it. If you really want to get into it, read the article to understand the entire process. But when the official results were announced and I saw Eli did not get in, I texted somebody who was in that room just to hear, did Eli even come close? And he told me Eli was nowhere close to winning this, to getting in this year on the first year of eligibility. If anything, in the first year of eligibility, Adam Vinatieri and Luke Kuechly had more support in the room than Eli Manning. So Eli, of course, two Super Bowls, two Super Bowl MVPs, beating Tom Brady, one of the greatest playoff runs twice in NFL history. That was not enough over here. And of course, it was just not enough for them over here. And they basically looked at Eli Manning having more Hall of Fame moments than a Hall of Fame career to get in his first year of eligibility. So we'll see what happens next year over here. Drew Brees becomes eligible. Larry Fitzgerald becomes eligible. I think both those guys are slam dunk first ballot Hall of Famers. That could make the entire process over here for Eli Manning a bit longer than we expected. So we also had Sterling Sharp get into the Hall of Fame. He was not a modern era finalist, but he also gets in over here. And he now becomes the first brother pairing, along with, of course, the brother Shannon Sharp, to be in the Hall of Fame. So we all thought it would be Eli and Peyton. In fact, it is not. It is Sterling and Shannon Sharp becoming the first brothers to ever be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, Ari, it was a crazy night. Obviously, social media was abuzz with all the different happenings. And one thing that you guys need to make sure that you don't miss on social media tomorrow and here on our audio feeds is Ari's playoff predictions. We have our final episode getting you ready for everything that is Super Bowl, more than just betting, getting you ready with the injuries, getting you ready with the storylines, all of that there. And right now, we've got some more special stuff coming up.
All right, so on Thursday, I had the chance to speak to a bunch of people who were down there in New Orleans for Radio Row. We had league people, players, and a bunch of other people. We're going to share a bunch of it over here on the audio feed. You might have seen some of the clips already on my X page on Twitter at My Sports Update, but let's play some of it here, and we're going to start with Tampa Bay Buccaneers All-Pro and Pro Bowl offensive tackle Tristan Wirfs. Here it is. I want to just look back at this past season just for you personally, because we obviously saw the surprise where you were named first team all pro, your wife and your newborn were there to surprise you. Just want to hear from you, like, what was that like for you, not only to be named that, but also to become the first ever player to be able to do it at left tackle and right tackle?
Yeah, that was really special. I think one, just, you know, having Meredith and Julia surprise me, but like that whole week, I was like, oh, it comes out Friday. Like telling her when I get home, I was like, comes out Friday. I was like, no one's done it at both sides. I said, I'm trying to. I was like, Jordan Mailata had a really great year. I was like, you know, it's going to be a toss up. And they brought me in there to talk about like our run game. So I was like, you know, I was wearing Crocs and they're like, do you want to change? I was like, no, I'm fine. And then, they brought them out. So that was pretty special. That was really cool.
You know, I don't think people talk enough about the fact that you started your NFL career over a right tackle and just made that switch over to left tackle, which I don't think it's that simple, and it's not, because I've spoken to offensive line people about it. It's not like writing from your right hand to left. It's impossible. So, look, how was that transition for you, and you're able to still stay on top of your game by just flipping over?
Yeah. I knew the more reps that I had, you know, the more comfortable I would feel. So I was like, I'm going to take my lumps. Like, I know it's not going to be perfect, you know, right away. But I just got to keep working, get as many reps as I can, you know, that first, well, they told me in the spring. So that summer, just, you know, I was with Luke Gedeke. We were just training. I was like, it'll click. It'll feel comfortable eventually. I tell people, one, it's like wiping your ass with your left hand, and two, like using a mouse with your left hand. Like, you know, just try something, chopsticks in your left hand. I practice doing that just so I could get comfortable with it. But yeah, it's a big change. It's huge.
You know, I want to go back to your draft. You were in that COVID draft, which was a very, very weird time in the NFL. You were the fourth tackle off the board. I remember the entire draft process. Everyone was saying he could go here, he could go there. No one really knows the order. We all just know there's four really good ones. Did the fact that you were the last of the four to go off the board give you some motivation going into the NFL?
Maybe a little bit. At the time, I wasn't too worried about that. You know, when they called me on draft night, they're like, you ready to protect Tom Brady? And I was like, I'll get ready. You know, that was kind of top of mind, you know, right there. But, you know, it didn't matter. You know, I understand that it's a business, and I wouldn't have been surprised if, you know, any order, the four guys would have went. I didn't think I was going to Tampa. I thought I pooped the bed in the interview with Tampa at the combine. And then they were actually my first, there's like the pre-draft interviews after the combine, and normally they're in person, but it was COVID, so we're all on Zoom. They were my first Zoom meeting. I've never used Zoom before. And I was like 2 or 3 minutes late because I couldn't figure out how to get logged on. And I said, I blew it. I said, they hate me. And then they called me on draft night. I said, all right, here we go. But no, I was ecstatic after that. I was excited to get down there.
Well, not only did they draft you, they traded up for you. And of course, you've had a lot of success so far there. Just want to go back to that rookie year, just being able to be with Tom and being on such a good team and going on that playoff run, winning a Super Bowl, in my mind, the best Super Bowl parade ever. Just could you just go back to that year and how awesome that was?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty insane. Like looking back on it now, like at the time, I didn't really know how crazy it was. I mean, we lose like 3 or 4 in a row there for a while or a little stretch. And I was like, in college, you know, coming from college, you lose two. For us at Iowa, it was like you lose two and we're out of the big race for the Big Ten championship. So like we lost two that year. And I was like, we can't. I said, we're done. And then we'd come in. They'd be like, we can still do what we want to do. We lost three. They said the same thing. We can still do what we want to do. We lost four. I said, this has to be it. I was like, that's, you know, but they said, we still do what we want to do. And then I think what we go on 13 games, including postseason. And then the next 13 games in a row, we won. So like looking back on it now, it was insane. Three road games against three former MVPs. You know, like it was to have a home Super Bowl. Like it's unbelievable. Like it's storybook stuff. So looking back on it is just incredible. But yeah, that was a wild year.
Yep, a wild card team, all the road playoff games, eliminating the Saints who won that division that year en route to the Super Bowl in Tampa Bay. And of course, beating this Chiefs team that is now in the Super Bowl. I do want to ask you about post Tom Brady. You obviously get the new quarterback with Baker Mayfield. Both of you are very, very close to each other. Both of you have had newborns around the same time. What was that transition like going from Tom, the greatest quarterback ever, to switching over to Baker, who signed a one-year prove-it deal at the time?
Yeah, no, I thought it was pretty smooth. I mean, Baker came in and kind of just won everyone over just with being who he is. You know, his personality is incredible, and he's a baller. He's a dog, you know. And it was really cool for me, you know. He's a little bit older than me, but like somebody, I mean, Tom was 22 years older than me. So like having somebody, you know, my age and that I could hang out with, go to dinner with, just all that stuff. So I think that really helped us click off the bat. But I thought it was a really smooth transition. You know, Bakes my quarterback, you know, I'll ride or die for him. So it's pretty awesome. I love him to death.
Well, you've now been in Tampa Bay for 5-6 years there. And I'm sure you've realized this, but after Tom left, there's been a problem in Tampa Bay for many years now that they don't get much recognition, not much national attention. I've spoken to Levante David about this, Rondé Barber about this. Like, for some reason, we don't talk about Tampa, even though there's so much success and you keep on winning the division and all of that. Do you have any opinion as to why that happens, that Tampa Bay does not get talked about when they should?
Man, I don't know. But you said a name that – you said Levante David. You talk about greats. He is criminally underrated and criminally underrecognized for what he's done and been doing for a long time. And it's It's a shame. It is. Levante is an incredible human being, an incredible football player. He's been doing it for 13 seasons now. But I don't know why. I don't know if it's – it can't be that small of a market. It's Tampa, you know. I don't know what it is, but Levante David's going to have a gold jacket one day.
Well, we have this NFL Spotlight show here, and we basically like putting a spotlight on people who deserve more recognition. We started this back in July. The first guest we had on the show was Levante David, because they're right. He's somebody who deserves a lot of it. So the episode got over 1 million views. I'm so happy people got to see who the person is and just how great he is as a player and a leader and what he's done in Tampa Bay ever since entering the league. I do want to ask you about one thing over here in the current team right now. The Liam Cohn situation, I'm not going to ask you about what happened, your thoughts on all of it, but just when it was all unfolding and you got those notifications and everything, it felt like a movie. What was it like for you as a player on the team reading all of that?
Yeah, so it was kind of crazy because like the whole O-line was together. We went on a little trip, and so like we're all seeing it, like, you know, break on Twitter or like break, you know, wherever, and then we saw that he was back with the Bucs, and then we saw like, no, he's in Jacksonville. And they blocked, or they tried to block something. So like it was a whirlwind, really. And then he had called us and told us, you know, he loves us and appreciates us, you know, because it, like it is a business. You don't know when an opportunity like that, you know, to go live your dream, go be a head coach, is going to come around. We understood. But yeah, it was just seeing it, like it was like back and forth. And then it said he took the job. So I was like, it was crazy, but you know, wish him success, wish him nothing but the best. And I saw Grizz just did like his first talk with the media today or yesterday or something. So we're excited about Grizz too. I mean, he's here. He was here this year, knows the system like the back of his hand. He's a wizard. So yeah, it's gonna be fun.
Yeah, I mean, it was truly an unprecedented situation, the way it all unfolded. Something that we don't really see much in hiring cycles. Last thing I want to ask you, you mentioned Grizz there. I know you're gonna have some continuity with the offensive line coaches, but what's it like for you to have now 4 straight years of a different offensive coordinator, going from Byron to Dave to Liam to now Grizz?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I mean, Bakes had 9 OCs now.
Nine, it's a lot.
OCs,
crazy.
Like that's insane. So, you know, I'm like, I've had 4. I was like, if he can do 9, I can do 4. You know, the thing I like is it's a similar. You know, the system hasn't really changed much. You know, I think the big change was from Byron to Dave, but. You know, now with Grizz, like he was here, you know, I would assume stuff's not going to change drastically, you know, maybe some terminology, you know, he might change a little bit of stuff, but Bakes confident about it. So I'm confident about it.
Hey, I just Venmo'd you for rent.
Nice. Now I can instantly spend it whether I'm checking out online with Venmo or using the Venmo debit card.
Say more.
More exactly. Because the more you do with Venmo, the more you get. Like earning up to 5% cash back with Venmo Stash on a bundle of brands.
So, order more pizza.
The math demands it.
Get the Venmo debit card.
Venmo Stash bundle terms and exclusions apply. See terms at venmo.me/stash terms. Venmo checkout not available at all merchants. Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A.
All right, next up we had the Los Angeles Rams second-year defensive tackle, Kobe Turner, one of the bright young defensive players in the NFL, as he joined us from Radio Row speaking about the Rams, Jared Verse, Aaron Donald, and much more. Here it is. I do want to go back just to your rookie year coming into the league as a day 2 pick. You get to walk into that team and you get to play with arguably, I don't think it's arguably, the best player of his era,
right,
in Aaron Donald. What was that year like being around Aaron and just being able to learn from somebody as great as him?
Yeah, it was awesome. I've done so many studies of his game when I was in college. He was a shorter guy, shorter arms, all of these things. He weighs less than me. He was a little bit more athletic than what I've been able to show up to this point. But I had a lot of respect for his game and, you know, to be able to see how he was able to beat people, even being undersized, as some people would say. So I've studied his game for forever, and to be able to walk into that room and to be able to work with him was incredible, to be able to learn his work ethic. And now to the point where he's a mentor to me, like an older brother type of figure. And so knowing that, you know, he's been able to show me so many different things, a lot of the resources that he's had, he's been able to share with me as well. So he's opened up the floodgates for me, and really for whatever I need, whatever I feel is going to continue to make me better as a player, lending me his ear whenever I need to talk about something. So it's meant a lot to be able to learn from him and to be able to work with him, and now to continue to work with him, or as, you know, having him as my mentor as well.
You finished third in Defensive Rookie of the Year last year. Tonight, we're going to find out who wins Defensive Rookie of the Year. I would say your teammate, Jared Verse, has a really good shot of winning that. What was it like having Jared around for year one and seeing what he was able to do as a rookie?
Yeah, he's obviously an incredible player. He's super talented, and he is a guy, too, that has a lot of confidence, and the rest of the defense can feed off of his confidence, his energy, and just his mentality as he approaches the game. You know, as everybody's heard, he's a talker. You hear that on all of the TV copies of any game. But yeah, he's an incredible player. But to really be able to play alongside him and Fisk, both of those guys have really elevated our defense, and to be able to just continue to work with them. And it's crazy to come into that situation as a captain when really I'm just 1 year ahead of them. So I see them a lot of times more so as my peers than as I'm captain. And even as a captain, I don't ever see myself above anybody or anything like that in the first place. But just to look to those guys and be like, yeah, like we're this young group that's taken the league by storm. So, you know, it's been incredible to see their growth over the season. And yeah, I'm excited for tonight to see, you know, who's going to hoist up that trophy.
Up next, we had ESPN analyst and, of course, the former Colts All-Pro center and interim head coach Jeff Saturday, as he spoke about the Colts, the current team, his teams when he was there, and much more. Here it is. I do want to look back at those Colts teams for a second. And I look back at that Colts era with, you know, Peyton and Edgerrin and Marvin and Dwight Freeney, Tony Dungy, even Bill Polian, all those names I just mentioned, they're all in the Hall of Fame. Reggie, of course, is a finalist here. We'll find out tonight what's going on with him. I'm just curious to hear with you, do you think you're a name also that deserves to be in that Hall of Fame conversation? Are you surprised we haven't really gotten more of that here since you've become eligible?
No, I mean, listen, for centers, it's really hard anyway. I mean, I had a great career, man. And I appreciate all the things that we had, the success that we had. I came in undrafted. So, you know, your first 4 years, I tell people, you're really earning it, right? You don't have the first round pedigree, all those kinds of things. And so it's a tougher way. If it works out, man, I'll be very fortunate. I've been up in the mix. I think I made it into the final 50, I think, this year. But unfortunately hadn't made it to the 15 and even further. But man, again, my career speaks for itself. I know how good I was as a player, and I'm appreciative to even be in the consideration, and whatever happens, I'll be good.
All right. Last question here. I want to ask you about this current Colts team over here. Just curious to hear your thoughts about this past season and I guess seeing former players like a McAfee and those type of people kind of taking shots at what's going on over there and the fact that there were no changes. Just your thoughts about all that.
Yeah, I was surprised. Again, when I went in and helped Jim, you know, a few years ago, I kind of felt like, you know, I knew what it looked like, and it wasn't on the cusp of all of a sudden turning around. And so there's no surprise to me of kind of what's happened. I figured it'd be 3 years no matter who got the job, and it'll be 3 years this season. And unfortunately, they have not had nearly the success that I thought they would in that division. I mean, you got two teams that are winning 3 and 4 games, and that we hadn't been able to break into the playoffs even as a wild card and not win the division is disappointing. And I think it's been 9 years, 8 or 9 years since they've won the division. Everybody else in the division has won it at least twice. That's not a good sign. We got to figure something out. I'm a fan as much as I am a former player. So I pull for them, man. And unfortunately, we ain't getting it done from the Colts side right now.
We also had New Orleans Saints wide receiver and all-pro kick returner, punt returner, Rashid Shaheed join us down there from New Orleans. Of course, the Saints are looking for a new head coach. I think we all know who it might be, but I spoke to him about that. Here it is. So you currently do not have a head coach on the team. There's a lot of buzz that somebody in the Super Bowl right now could be your next head coach. Just curious, from you being in the building so much, what do you think this team needs from their next head coach, whoever it's going to be?
I feel like the next guy we bring in, first off, I know it's going to be a great guy. The organization is going to bring in the right guy. Just a person that loves the city of New Orleans, that understands the culture and, you know, just the vibe of the people and the team. just a guy that is going to come into work every day to push us to be better and just lead us. I feel like that's what we need. You know, is a leader and you know, a man that we can go to talk about anything and just be there for us off the field. That's going to be the key.
Well, I think we're going to have some news over here in the next week on who that's going to be. Last one for me over here. This past season, before your season was cut short, you did play against the Eagles and you did play against the Chiefs. I guess let me put your analyst hat on over here. What do you think happens in the big game, especially knowing you face both these teams?
Yes. I got to go with the Chiefs, man. I keep telling people I can't bet against Mahomes, and I'm going to keep it that because, yeah, he's great. And the Chiefs, they're both great teams. I feel like the Eagles probably have a better roster. But, yeah, the Kansas City has great coaches and wonderful players as well.
And lastly, we had the New England Patriots defensive end and captain Dietrich Wise, as he spoke about just how shocked he is to see Bill Belichick at North Carolina and his new head coach in Mike Vrabel. Here is that conversation. Now, I'll be remiss if I don't ask you a little bit about some of the coaching stuff that's going on. First of all, are you surprised that the coach you've had for so many years in Bill Belichick is not in the NFL? And how do you think he'll do coaching college at UNC?
Look, the great coach didn't think he'll be in college. I will say and tell you that. I thought he'll at least go lateral and go to an NFL team and keep doing his thing. But he said, you know what, I'm gonna go down to the young guys, teach the young generation. So it's going to be a cool experience watching him on TV, being the coach of a bunch of 18, 19, 20-year-olds. But at the same time, college now is like a semi-pro. It's kind of has that semi-pro feel. So he can probably be that hard-nosed, old-school coach because it's college. You know, you can tell kids, hey, oh, up, down, let's go, hit the line, you know, things like that. And at the same time, treat it like the NFL. So I root for his success. I'd like to see what he does in the future.
It'd be so interesting to watch. And you're right. I mean, the way the college game has changed, there's NIL, transfer portal. It is a little bit reminiscent of what's going on in the NFL, but I can't wait to see what he does there in his first year at UNC. Let me just ask you also about your new current coach, Mike Vrabel. Have you had a chance to speak with him? And what do you think about that hire your team made, bringing in a former Patriots linebacker to take over?
So I have not been able to speak with him. No. Second, I think it was a good hire. Definitely, I played with Gerard Mayo. I played under Gerard Mayo last year. I thought he was a really good coach. It was very unfortunate of what happened to him, but I know, you know, business is business, so they had to do what they got to do. And then when they brought in Vrabel, I felt like Vrabel was a good hire. He's a hard-nosed coach, played in the game, similar to the coach in the past, played in the game, knows the game, led the team defensively to a lot of wins, championships. So he knows how to relate to players. I've seen the moves that he's been making to bring great coaches in. So he's already off to a great start. The fans love Vrabel, so the fans will be behind him. The players, once again, have to have another coach that played the game. So this is something that he's familiar with us. He can relate to us. We can relate to him. So that relatability is 50% of being a coach. He knows X and O, so I know he has a lot of coaches around him, but being able to relate to the players, how they feel in these moments, he's been in these moments. And then we played against him, Tennessee Titans. So he's always had hard-nosed football players over there, ground pound, big guys, ready to put in work. So I know the Patriots will be a team like that in the future, a hard-nosed team ready to put in work every single day and going to take it four quarters.
He definitely had a lot of success in Tennessee, was coach of the year there. He actually eliminated the Patriots in what ended up being Tom Brady's final game with the Patriots.
Yeah, say that. I had
to bring it up. It's the truth. But now he's part of you guys. He's part of you guys now. So you're going to enjoy some success with Mike. I guarantee you that. One of the best in the NFL. All right. So that would do it here for the Friday, February 7 edition of the NFL Spotlight Show. A lot of extra stuff going on over here on the show today. NFL honors officially in the books. All the great interviews that we had, of course, you guys just listened to. And enjoy the Super Bowl on Sunday. Hopefully, it's going to be a great, close, tight game. Enjoy wherever you watch it, all the food and all the fun. And of course, we will be back here on Monday morning, of course, recapping the Super Bowl, but also looking ahead to an offseason, which should be very, very crazy. So enjoy the big game, and we'll see you all here on Monday morning.